Welcome to The Unraveler, a weekly commentary devoted to explaining the Torah, Haftarah, and other aspects of Jewish history, ideas, and thought. This podcast is made by the FJMC, the Federation of Jewish Men's Clubs. The material of these Unraveler podcasts provide a historical and somewhat different approach to help you, the listener, better understand Jewish life and thought. This week's Haftarah commentary is read by Michael Freilich of the Seaboard region of the FJMC, whose Judaic knowledge has been shared with men throughout North America. We hope you enjoy it and find it intellectually challenging. The opinions expressed in The Unraveler are those of the author and do not necessarily represent the opinions or policy of the FJMC.
Shalom, all you all. This week's portion is from Parsha Vayechel, and the Haftarah is from 1 Kings chapter 7, verses 40 through 50. The day's Unraveler was originally promulgated in February of 2014 and was written by Rabbi Joshua Katzen, who at the time was in New York but who is now on the West Coast. He writes, "Talent is a wondrous thing, although many can develop sufficient facility for playing an instrument, creating some form of art, play a sport, write a communication, or learn to maintain odds and ends around the house, far fewer of us can do it well or with notable depth. Amongst those who may be talented enough to become professional or recognized in a field, there are the precious few who rise to the level of genius: Maimonides, Leonardo da Vinci, Albert Einstein, Jimi Hendrix. They all had talents that, it is safe to say, transcended the common understanding of talent, at least in so much that their vision and creativity changed the world. As the 19th century philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer wrote, talent hits a target no one else can hit. Genius hits a target no one else can see. Genius illuminates undiscovered terrain, and we are blessed with awe." Our Haftarah leads with King Solomon acquiring the recognized talent of Hiram from Tyre. Hiram was a master craftsman endowed with the same mysterious talent of Bezalel, the master craftsman who crafted the various utensils and ritual objects of the Mishkan, the first holy place in which the Israelites and the divine would meet. Like Bezalel, Hiram was filled with chachmah. He was filled with wisdom. He was endowed with skill, ability, and talent for executing all work in bronze. Came to King Solomon and executed all his work. A more direct translation of key words would render Hiram being filled with wisdom, understanding, and knowledge of all forms of creative labor. What can this mean for us? Our mystical traditions suggest our universe is endowed with divine energies and characteristics that are imprinted in the form of a spiritual DNA called the Sefirot, of which there are 10 in total. 7 are manifest in the physical realm, and 3 are transcendent of the physical: Chachmah for wisdom, Binah for understanding, and Da'at for knowledge. Chachmah is like a bolt of lightning from which erupts the creative spark of imagination. This is fed to Binah, which organizes this initial wisdom into discernible deductions of understanding. From here, it processes onward to Da'at, where the creative thought is translated into applicable skill and knowledge. Another understanding of Da'at is its association with Yichud, which means unification, where an idea can unify with emotions. God called out to Bezalel by name, and here King Solomon sends for Hiram by name, for he had indeed made a name for himself as a master craftsman. The genius and talent of these individuals was, perhaps, an example of unfettered access to that deep well of creativity, translated through the Sefirot of Chachmah, Binah, and Da'at, and then manifest in the physical as awesome works of splendor. The master artist becomes, in a sense, a prism through which to behold God's magnificence. In today's world of self-oriented spirituality and psychological actualization, one might think that each of us has a Hiram within, waiting to come out, but we don't. At least we shouldn't think of it that way. King Solomon employs Hiram to build the permanent meeting place between the Israel nation and God. quite reasonably, a most coveted opportunity by any tradesman, because Hiram was blessed with this particular talent. He was an outlier. Most others are not. Our ego might be driven for prestige of that level of recognition and talent, but that ought not be our lesson. Rather, we should learn that we each have our own particular contribution to make in connecting with God and the world. Action, not ritual, changes the world. Ritual elevates our actions, but cannot replace the hard work of building character, of raising mention, and engaging in daily tasks of tikkun olam. If the temple would be a metaphor for the world we seek to create, Hiram was the architect of our ritual center, but each of us is charged with the task of maintaining a society worthy of God's continued presence, building the world as a temple. There is a dangerous temptation to narcissism should we think that we need to be Hiram or at most notable and recognized name. Rather, each of us has a responsibility to better refine our imagination, creativity, and intellectual abilities, our own chachma, bina, and da'at, and apply them in ways that might better serve our sphere of influence, whatever our talent. There's a famous story of Reb Zusha at his deathbed makes the point. The students of Reb Zusha, hearing that their teacher was about to die, came to pay him one last visit. But entering the room, they were surprised to see him trembling with fear. "Why are you afraid of death?" they asked. "In your life, have you not been as righteous as Moses himself?" He responds, "When I stand before the throne of judgment, I will not be asked, 'Reb Zusha, why are you not like Moses?' I'll be asked, 'Reb Zusha, why are you not like Zusha?" To realize our own individual potential is our greatest challenge. As Mark Twain correctly observed, we are always more anxious to be distinguished for a talent which we do not possess than to be praised for the 15 which we do possess. We should be blessed to recognize and refine the talents we have and make conscious contributions to Melacha, the work, continued building of our world as a worthy residing place for the divine, whatever ways, large and small, that are within our hands. Some food for thought. If beauty is in the eye of the beholder, then some sanctuaries are elegant, some are warm, some are opulent, others are downright gaudy. What do you think contributes to creating a space that is elevating as opposed to distracting in its splendor? If God is meant to be everywhere, then what is the point of building holy spaces? Do dedicated sanctuary spaces add to our experience of holiness, revelation, or are we objectifying and limiting God and our own experience of the spiritual to do these spaces? The Kutzker Rebbe famously responded to a question when he was 4 years old. Where is God? With the insightful point, wherever we let God in. If this is true, then shouldn't we be spending more time in homeless shelters and opportunity-deprived areas than in shul? Is it fair to say that our prayer can only have meaning if we're active in uplifting to the downtrodden? Are holy spaces there for a reason other than God? How might we find or create balance between time in the sanctuary and time in the world? Thank you, y'all.
We hope that you've enjoyed this podcast. The FJMC mission is to involve Jewish men in Jewish life. You can find more information about the organization at the FJMC's website at www.fjmc.org. Music for this podcast is Climb by Shane Ivers and is available at www.silvermansound.com.